Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. In looking at today's front page, we see stories of county box at private legal bill and acting appropriately. And today, we'll start with Unmask DBQ ask council to rescind mandate. Elected leaders are unmoved by petition with 560 signatures by John Cruz. A petition signed by 560 people calling for Dubuque to end its face mask mandate did not sway city council members Monday. In a unanimous vote, council members voted to receive and file the petition submitted by local group Unmask DBQ, which demanded the repeal of the city's ordinance mandating that residents wear face coverings while out in public, indoors or outdoors, when social distancing is not possible. Council members approved the mandate in early August in an effort to limit the spread of COVID-19. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization advocate for the effectiveness of wearing face masks as a means of reducing the spread of COVID-19. Last Wednesday, CDC Director Robert Redfield said there is clear scientific evidence that face masks are effective in protecting against COVID-19. Speaking before the council on Monday, Nicole Weber of Unmask DBQ argued that the local mandate has done little to curb the spread of the disease while negatively impacting many residents. Our hospitals are not overrun, yet the burden on society is significant, which has caused mental, physical, and psychological ramifications to a significant degree, all of which led to the polarizing and politicizing of the mask issue, Weber said. The restrictions that you have imposed have done significant economic damages to the people and businesses that reside in the city of Dubuque that can't be undone. Weber pointed to Dubuque County's rapidly climbing number of COVID-19 cases and spiking positivity rate to argue against the effectiveness of the mandate. Ultimately, the pandemic does not give you, the local municipal government, the right to emergency authority that prevents our constitutional rights, Weber said. Several council members thanked her for her comments but reiterated their support for the mandate. I disagree with the general direction of moving away from a face covering ordinance, said council member Brad Kavanaugh, later adding, we seem to be in different realities when it comes to facts, depending on where we get our facts from. Kavanaugh said he believes COVID-19 counts continue to rise partly because many residents are not obeying the mask mandate or practicing social distancing. Council member Laura Rozelle stressed the importance of all people in the city wearing face coverings. No one wants to wear a mask, but it's a minor inconvenience, she said. I believe we have a responsibility to care for each other whenever we can. Prior to Weber's comments, Kavanaugh asked Mary Rose Corrigan, public health specialist for the city, if it was appropriate for the city to repeal the mask mandate. Corrigan said scientific evidence continues to show that masks are an effective deterrent. It's not the only tool, and it's not a 100% effective tool either, Corrigan said, but it is something, and I think we need to do everything we can to reduce the spread in the community. Mayor Roy Buell said many residents and businesses have thanked the council for passing the mandate. Ultimately, Buell said, he will continue to act on the advice of medical professionals. I think generally people in the community understand what we are trying to do, he said. Next from the front page, county balks at private legal bill. County attorney says legal representation of the county is his jurisdiction alone, by Benjamin Fisher. Dubuque County's legal counsel says it does not have to pay the firm of County Supervisor Jay Wickham's sister for work that only Wickham authorized. The County Board of Supervisors on Monday received and filed the legal opinion from County Attorney C.J. May III. In July, the county received an invoice from Cedar Rapids, Iowa law firm Simmons Perrine Moyer Bergman for $961.75, for services authorized by Wickham in mid-March. Wickham wanted to know if the Board of Supervisors had the authority to issue a countywide stay-at-home order. When the pandemic was just hitting us and the topic of shelter-in-place was being discussed, Myself and others in the community were trying to get legal opinions, Wickham told the Telegraph Herald on Monday. We reached out to a law firm and the Urban County Coalition's legal representative and former Dubuque City Attorney and current senior counsel, Barry Lindahl. There were quite a few different legal opinions coming to us. According to the invoice from Simmons Perrine Moyer Bergman, addressed to both Wickham and the Board of Supervisors, attorneys Brian Fagan and Lynn Hartman spent a total of 3.05 hours researching the county's authority to issue such an order, reporting findings back to Wickham and reviewing his eventual resolution. Hartman is Wickham's sister. Wickham and Simmons Perrine Moyer Bergman got involved because lawyers for the Urban County Coalition, of which Dubuque County is a member, were working on similar authority matters for Linn County, where the firm is based. He said May was aware in March of Wickham working with the firm. I did not think they were going to send an invoice, but they did, Wickham said. We were under a state of emergency. The last thing I was concerned with was any type of jurisdiction, whether the advice was coming from the county attorney or a private attorney. May also was consulted on the authority question and issued an opinion on April 6th. An enacted stay-in-place order by you would, in my opinion, be subject to time-consuming and expensive legal challenge and may very well expose the county to liability for damages incurred by the private sector caused by their cease in operations, May wrote at the time. On April 7th, Wickham's motion to approve a shelter-in-place order died when it was not seconded by either of the other two county supervisors. But at least one of them was not aware that Wickham had sought the opinion of Simmons Perrine Moyer Bergman. I first saw the bill to the county in July, which was the first I'd known of it, Supervisor Ann McDonough, a retired attorney, told the Telegraph Herald. Supervisor Dave Baker and I have been going down and reading the claims, so I just happened to see it as I was going through. I realized it's a claim we shouldn't pay because we have a county attorney and he never approved for us to go to another counsel. Wickham said he thought the problem was procedural. They sent us an invoice, but there was no paper trail for the procurement, he said. So the county auditor, Denise Dolan, wanted CJ to say yes or no. Dolan said Monday that she had wanted to know if she could pay the bill that she did not think met the letter of the law. In his letter to the board, May said he is bound by state code to legally represent the county government and that representing the county is his authority alone. Similarly, neither the board nor an individual board member has the authority to retain or appoint a private attorney to serve the legal interests of the county, he wrote in his letter. It is my opinion that Dubuque County does not have any liability to pay this invoice, and the Board of Supervisors have no legal authority to pay this claim, as it is for legal fees charged by a private attorney representing the private interest of one of the county's elected officials. On Monday, Wickham said he respected May's opinion and did not plan to push it. Wickham and McDonough voted to accept and file May's letter. I don't think the county is worried about it, Wickham said. I don't think the firm is probably worried about it, though I haven't talked to them since March. It is some of $80 million we spend, and we didn't end up spending it. Wickham does not plan to pay the bill himself and said he hoped the firm would not be too upset over a relatively small bill. Baker did not vote on receiving the latest opinion from May, as internet issues prevented him from being on the virtual meeting at the time. He could not be reached for comment after the meeting. Fagan and Hartman did not return request for comment Monday afternoon. And finally from the front page, acting appropriately. Students and staff at local schools are adopting strategies that will enable the show to go on, by Ali Hinga. Maria Marcus has gotten used to acting with a mask on, taking frequent rehearsal breaks, and staying 6 feet from her fellow actors in recent weeks. It's definitely a different experience for the senior at Dubuque Senior High School, but considering that she and her classmates originally worried they wouldn't be able to put on a show, they didn't find it too hard to adjust to the new rules. Considering we didn't think we would have a season, we are all very grateful to have a play, Maria said. Students and staff at local schools are making significant shifts so they can hold fall theater productions while mitigating the spread of COVID-19. While the pandemic impacts many aspects of those performances, students and teachers said they are just glad to have the chance to participate. Students are really happy to be doing something that is somewhat normal to them, said Heather Conan, an English teacher at Hempstead High School who is co-directing the fall play. To be able to do what they love to do outweighs all of the work. As senior, a concern for student safety was woven into the selection of this year's show. Students are performing The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which theater director Aaron Dean selected in part because the play involves a high school student with a social disorder that prevents him from being close to other people. That plot point works particularly well for students trying to spread out from one another. We are able to social distance with our actors on stage, and it makes sense that they're not within 6 feet of each other, Dean said. Dean and his students plan to hold the production, which opens on Thursday, September 24th, outside in Seniors' Courtyard. The audience will be limited to fewer than 50 people, though the show also will be shown live online. I think, as challenging as the circumstances are, I'm just glad that we're able to create theater, Dean said. It was difficult not being able to really put on shows or perform for the last 5+ months, so I think all of the students have reacted really well. Wallert Catholic High School students likewise are preparing for an outdoor performance in the school courtyard with the musical A Year with Frog and Toad. Students have held as many outdoor rehearsals as they can while wearing masks and distancing themselves, said Veronica McDonald, a junior and student director for the show. She said students have adjusted well to the changes, though some parts can make rehearsal a bit awkward. Students tire more easily when they rehearse in masks. There is also one scene in which characters are supposed to hug one another, but students only are mimicking the hug for rehearsals. I guess you can imagine how awkward a fake hug can be, Veronica said. She said she is excited for the production, noting that in the early days of the pandemic, she was scared she wouldn't get to participate in any performances. I think it just raises everybody's spirits to do something, even if it is a bit adjusted, Veronica said. Theater arts director Aidan McSparren said that, for the most part, just a few actors will be on stage at a time during the show. They also generally will be at least 9 feet away from the audience, creating enough space for students to sing safely. At Hempstead, Conan and co-director Kate Reap recently finished casting for this fall's production of Arsenic and Old Lace. Conan said the pair planned to have actors rehearse by scene, so students only need to be present if they are in that scene. Once somebody is finished, they can head out, and that's fewer bodies to worry about, Conan said. Conan and Reap also will restrict physical interactions between characters. Students will perform spaced 6 feet apart, and if they need to come closer than that to another student, it will only be momentarily. Students will wear masks not just at rehearsal, but for the performance too. The audience capacity in Hempstead's auditorium will be significantly smaller and attendees will be distanced. Conan and Reap said that because so many aspects of students' lives look different now, the school play provides some normalcy. It's as close to normal as we can get, Conan said. Not all schools have been able to work out a way to adapt their performances, however. East Dubuque, Illinois High School is not hosting productions because the state is limiting gathering sizes to 50 people or fewer, Principal Darren Siriani said. When you think about any of those types of activities, by the time you get the kids and that many parents, you're not able to have anything functionally at that point, he said. He said staff will look at ways they can hold performances with larger audiences when they are allowed to do so. That's our ultimate goal, Siriani said. And from the Almanac, today is Tuesday, September 22nd, the 266th day of 2020. There are 100 days left in the year. On this date, in 1862, President Abraham Lincoln issued the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation declaring all slaves in rebel states should be free as of January 1, 1863. In 1949, the Soviet Union exploded its first atomic bomb. In 1961, the Interstate Commerce Commission issued rules prohibiting racial discrimination on interstate buses. In 1964, the musical Fiddler on the Roof, starring Zero Mostel, opened on Broadway, beginning a run of 3,242 performances. In 1975, Sarah Jane Moore attempted to shoot President Gerald R. Ford outside a San Francisco hotel, but missed. In 1980, the Persian Gulf conflict between Iran and Iraq erupted into full-scale war. And in 1989, songwriter Irving Berlin died in New York City at age 101. This provided by the Associated Press. From the Dubuque and Tri-State page, Dubuque County reports 40 new COVID-19 cases, one more death. A Manchester assisted living facility has an outbreak with 13 reported positive cases. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Monday's developments included: Dubuque County reported 40 additional cases of COVID-19 from 5 p.m. Sunday to 5 p.m. Monday. The county's total stood at 2,813 as of the latter time. There was one additional related death in Dubuque County during the 24-hour span, bringing the death toll to 41. The county reported 131 new tests during that time period, so the county's positivity rate during that span was 30.5%. The county's to-date positivity rate increased slightly to 10%. With 618 new confirmed cases and 2,595 new tests during the past 2 weeks, the county's 14-day positivity rate as of 5 p.m. Monday rose to 23.8%. The Telegraph Herald's calculation, based on the state's totals, continues to exceed the state's reported 14-day positivity rate due to the state's practice of not counting recent confirmed cases until all data is received, such as the date of birth of the testee. This practice drives down the positivity rate even though those cases have been confirmed in a specific county. At 5 p.m. Monday, the state reported Dubuque County's 14-day positivity rate at 14.5%. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered in Dubuque County from the number of confirmed cases, there were 885 active cases as of 5 p.m. Monday, an increase of 35 from the previous day. The state website listed hospitalizations by Dubuque as of Sunday: Dubuque County, 18, Clayton and Delaware counties, 1 each, Jackson and Jones counties, 2 each. The one Dubuque County outbreak at a long-term care center listed on the state website saw an increase in that 24-hour period. Sunnycrest Manor is now listed as having 9 positive cases with 2 recovered. An outbreak is defined as 3 or more positive cases at a facility. The Good Neighbor Home in Manchester has an outbreak, now reporting 13 positive cases with 1 individual listed as recovered. Delaware County reported 7 additional cases, as did Jackson County. Jones County reported 3, and Clayton County reported 2 additional cases. Iowa's statewide confirmed caseload grew by 702 during the 24-hour span to reach 80,047. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported 26 additional cases Monday, increasing the county's total to 847. Free drive-through testing will be held from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, September 23rd, at the Grant County Fairgrounds in Lancaster, Wisconsin. No appointments are necessary. Lafayette County reported 9 more cases, Crawford County 3 more, Iowa County added 2 more. Statewide, Wisconsin added 1,271 new cases Monday, pushing the total to 102,498. There were 2 additional related deaths, so the state count moved to 1,244. In Illinois, Joe Davies County reported 8 more cases on Monday. Statewide, Illinois reported 1,477 new confirmed cases Monday, along with 7 additional confirmed deaths. That brings the state's totals to 275,735 cases and 8,457 deaths. documents. Three arrested, part of large-scale drug ring. The suspects are accused of using fraudulent scripts to obtain prescription drugs in Dubuque. Dubuque police arrested three people over the weekend who allegedly are part of a nationwide operation to fraudulently obtain prescription drugs. Rebecca J. Romero, 30, of Fitchburg, Wisconsin, was arrested at 2:27 p.m. Saturday at Hartig Drug, 1600 University Avenue, on a charge of felony prescription fraud, while Cameron M. Alexander, 28, of Madison, Wisconsin, was arrested at the store on a charge of conspiracy to commit a felony. Malik J. Bragg, 23, of Madison, Wisconsin, was arrested at 4:09 p.m. Saturday in the 800 block of Loris Boulevard on charges of felony prescription fraud and possession of marijuana. Court documents made available on Monday state that the Nebraska State Patrol reached out to Dubuque area pharmacists, including at Hartig, on Saturday to warn that members of the group likely would be in the area trying to obtain prescription drugs illegally. Hartig staff then called police when Romero entered and tried to use a fraudulent script to obtain promethazine with codeine, documents state. Alexander was with her. Contact was made with Nebraska State Patrol Sergeant Chris Apley, who confirmed that the USDEA and Nebraska State Patrol were jointly working on a large-scale drug syndicate involved in passing fraudulent prescription scripts across the United States, including the Midwest, documents state. They also note that Alexander has completed several other similar transactions throughout the Midwest. Meanwhile, Bragg attempted to fill a fraudulent prescription at about 2:15 p.m. at the Hartig Drug at 157 Locust Street, according to documents. Staff told Bragg to come back in 15 to 20 minutes to pick up the prescription. Bragg subsequently was pulled over by police and arrested. Police reported finding marijuana in the vehicle as well. Next, from across the tri-states, New Innovation Hub Aims to Grow Businesses in Wisconsin, by Bennett Goldstein, Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin-Platteville is developing an innovation hub that aims to develop additional high-tech jobs across the southwest corner of the state. Backed by a $1.1 million investment, the Innovation Driving Entrepreneurship Accelerator will open to the public in early 2021, bridging a gap between workforce needs and university resources, including faculty experts, lab space, programming, and graduates in the STEM fields. It has a huge focus on our community, bringing in people who are innovative in the community and teaching them how to be entrepreneurs and connecting them with university resources, said Jody Proces, a professor of engineering who will oversee the hub along with Marsha Har Bailey, a faculty member with UWP's business school. The hub, which will employ at least two staff members and student interns, will offer short courses in app and database development along with training on business plan development, marketing, patent protection, and prototype creation. Entrepreneurs will have opportunities for mentoring, networking, and consultation with staff and UWP faculty. Many services will come at no charge to participants. Within the Idea Hub's first 3 years of operation, the university intends to spur the creation of 30 new businesses and 55 new jobs across a five-county region. To support its efforts, the U.S. Economic Development Administration awarded a grant totaling more than $500,000, which was matched by local partners, including UWP Foundation, Prosperity Southwest Wisconsin, WISIS, and Grant County Economic Development Corp. Platteville was one of 52 communities to receive federal grants from a pool of nearly 600 applicants. Southwestern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission will market the Idea Hub and recruit entrepreneurs. We've got independent-minded people who are inherent problem solvers. We are hoping to find those folks who have an idea and interest and support them, said Executive Director Troy Majid. There have been resources available, but the university is going to bring strong coordination both on and off campus to this effort. A campus survey found that 50% of UWP students desire to remain in the region after graduation, but believe a lack of job opportunities would require them to depart to secure employment. University leaders believe that recent graduates also represent a ready supply of entrepreneurs if given support and opportunities. The Idea Hub will not reproduce services already offered by Platteville Business Incubator, which initially will house the hub until it secures its own space, according to Executive Director Kate Koziel. "I see great synergy between the two," she said. In Dyersville, Iowa, new business offers healthy drink options. Healthy, nutritious drinks are on tap at a new Dyersville business. New U, located at 248 First Avenue E, Suite B, serves healthy replacement shakes and metabolism-boosting teas. "A lot of people in Dyersville are health conscious," said owner Mikhail Wainwright. "When we came out here, we noticed a lot of walkers. I think this is a great place to help people start getting healthier." Drinks made at New U can be used as either replacement drinks or supplement drinks, according to Wainwright. Wainwright knows she might have customers come in who are new to replacement and supplement drinks. She said she will ask new customers about their health goals. Wainwright believes the COVID-19 pandemic has made people more health conscious. "A lot of people have been refocusing on their health," she said. "They have been staying at home all the time and not necessarily watching what they are eating." New U is open from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 6 a.m. to noon Saturday. Longtime city attorney resigning. A longtime serving attorney recently announced his retirement and subsequent resignation from his post as Dyersville's chief legal counsel. Mark Casey will resign on September 30th, according to a letter to the Dyersville City Council, in part to spend more time with his family. "After 46 years as a resident of Dyersville, I will be retiring, and my wife and I will be relocating to the Kansas City area to be closer to our two children and granddaughter," Casey wrote. Except for two brief periods, Casey has served as the Dyersville City Attorney since 1974. "During this time, I have assisted numerous mayors, council members, and administrators as they moved the community forward to what is today a modern, progressive city, which is the envy of many similarly sized and larger communities," Casey wrote. And from Lafayette County, Wisconsin, Farmer Conservation Group to host Drive-By Field Day. Members of a farmer-led water conservation association invite the public to visit their farms to observe innovative soil management practices. Lafayette Ag Stewardship Alliance will host a field day from noon to 3 p.m. September 30th at four locations, according to a press release. The farmers will be available to answer questions at each stop. Birgit Family Farms will showcase low disturbance manure injection and summer seeded cover crops at a field a half mile west of 8692 Lafayette County M, Darlington. Red Rock View Farms will display low disturbance manure injection and summer seeded alfalfa at a field located a half mile northwest of 10548 Palmer Road, Darlington. Darlington Ridge Farms will showcase surface applied solid manure and summer seeded sorghum Sudan grass at a field located at the intersection of Twin Bridge Road and Hilldale Road, Cuba City. Camps Farms will showcase winter beef applied manure, early spring seeded cover crops, and corn for grain at a field located at the intersection of Wisconsin 81 and Roseville Road, Darlington. For more information, call Josh Camps at 608-732-6717. County searching for new health director. Lafayette County has named an interim health director after the former department head, Elizabeth Townsend, was let go earlier this month. Julie Libfried will oversee the county's health department while the position is advertised, according to county officials. Townsend was employed at will, and County Board Chairman Jack Sauer said she was let go because it wasn't working out for the citizens of Lafayette County. Townsend joined the Lafayette County Health Department in November 2018 after serving as the health director for Joe Davies County for 4 years. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 22, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Dennis Francis Rolse, 86, of Manchester, Iowa, formerly of Earlville, passed away on Sunday, September 20th, at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester. Dennis was born on April 6, 1934, at Petersburg, the son of John and Veronica Sasson Rolse. He was raised and educated in the Greeley area. Dennis served honorably in the United States Army. On February 16, 1960, Dennis married Jean Rolling at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Colesburg. 8 children were born to this union. The couple farmed together on the family farm north of Earlville, where they raised and milked Brown Swiss cattle and were members of the Iowa Brown Swiss Association. Dennis also worked at Lumber Specialties in Dyersville for 20-plus years. In 2019, they moved to the Good Neighbor Home. Jean passed away January 30, 2020. Dennis was a member of St. Joseph Catholic Church in Greeley for many years and now is a member of St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester. Dennis and Jean always tended a large garden on the farm and enjoyed going to dances in the local area. He enjoyed his farm all tractors and loved and enjoyed his family. Online condolences may be sent to www.leonard-mullerfh.com. Massive Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 24th at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester with Reverend Gabriel Anderson officiating. Visitation from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Friends may also call from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday, September 23rd at Leonard Muller Funeral Home. Interment at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery, Greeley, Iowa. Because of COVID-19, masks are strongly recommended at the funeral home and at the church. Bunny Finley, 68, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away Monday, September 21st at home surrounded by her family. Per Bunny's request, there will be no service. Casey Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Bunny was born on October 5, 1951, in St. Louis, Missouri, the daughter of Richard and Joyce Wilmot. She graduated from Marshall High School. Bunny worked in many local businesses and loved serving Cuba City. She continued working until the time of her cancer diagnosis. Bunny loved spending time with family and friends and with her best friend, her sister, Lee Hilby. She truly loved spending time with each and every one of her grandchildren. Bunny was well known for her quick wit, sense of humor, and giving everyone a nickname. Bunny greeted everyone with a warm smile and wanted to get to know their stories. She became friends with kids in the community as she watched them grow up. Bunny enjoyed thrifting and was a diehard sports fan. She loved the Miami Dolphins, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, the Atlanta Braves, and Chicago Cubs. The family wishes to thank Bunny's special friends, Trudy, Ladine, Caroline, Jen, and everyone who has sent cards, gifts, flowers, donations, and blessings during Bunny's illness. A special thank you to A Grace Hospice, Thompson's IGA, and Dr. Klan. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.caseymcnett.com. Robert W. Boringer, 82, of Cassville, died on Friday, September 18th. A massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 26th, at St. Charles Catholic Church in Cassville, with visitation from 9 a.m. until time of the services. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home is assisting the family. Tamara S. Balk, 55, of Thompson, Illinois, died on Tuesday, September 15th. A celebration of life will be held on a later date. Law Jones Funeral Home is assisting the family. Carl Kiernan, 79, of Edgewater, Florida, and formerly of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, September 15th at Hospice Care Center in Edgewater. Kenneth E. Mahoney, 89, of Prairie du Chien, died on Sunday, September 20th. Private funeral services will be held in Calvary Cemetery in Prairie du Chien. Garrity Funeral Home is assisting the family. David J. Hubbard, 63, of Prairie du Chien, died on Friday, September 18th, at his home. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. Shirley Cruiser, 81, of Hazel Green, died on Sunday, September 20th. Complete arrangements are pending at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque, Illinois. Burial will be in St. Joseph Cemetery in Sinsinawa. Jean Ann M. Cornish, 87, of Dubuque, died on Monday, September 21st. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 26th, at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. A funeral mass will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Contact specific locations for more information. Teresa D. Brandenburg, formerly of Dyersville, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. today at Reef Funeral Home, Dyersville. Visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. John H. Del DeGan of Dubuque. Celebration of life from noon to 5 p.m. Sunday, September 27th at Barrington Lakes Pavilion, 11342 Lakeview Drive. Thomas G. Feltz of Dubuque. Services at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at Church of the Resurrection. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Charles A. Graw of Dubuque. Celebration of life from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, September 26th at 1600 White Street. Jeffrey R. Hayes of Keeler, Wisconsin. Celebration of life from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, September 26th at Ox's Grotto. Marge E. Herbers of Bloomington, Wisconsin. Memorial Mass at noon Thursday, September 24th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Bloomington. John Paul Jameson of B-Town, Wisconsin. Graveside service at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 26th at B-Town Cemetery. Adarine A. Kaiser of Manchester, Iowa. Services at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. today at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Kenneth J. Miller of Fayette, Iowa. Services at 10 a.m. today at United Methodist Church, West Union, Iowa. Edith M. Mills of Muscatine, Iowa. Services at 2 p.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at Nichols Cemetery. James R. Olson of Lansing, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at United Methodist Church in Lansing. Visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Ronald C. Rotkowski of Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Services at 10:30 a.m. today at St. Augustine University Parish, Plattsville, Wisconsin. Visitation from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Lester Steffens of West Union, Iowa. Services at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 26th at St. Peter Lutheran Church, El Dorado, Iowa. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, September 25th at Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home in West Union. And from today's sports page, college football, Clark Pride. Clark's transferring powers. Mueller Thompson among transfer players keying the Pride in their second season, by Brendan West. Brandon Mueller's arrival to Clark was fairly unceremonious. So was Cortez Thompson's. but as two of the very limited number of Pride football players in town during a pandemic-stricken summer, the two decided to connect. Mueller, a transfer quarterback from Baker University, needed someone to help him fine-tune his passes. Thompson, formerly a wide receiver at the University of Dubuque, needed someone to throw to him. Brandon Mueller talked to me a lot this summer, told me that I'd be a nice receiver for this team, said Thompson, a 6'2", 190-pound sophomore from Madison, Wisconsin. He's an amazing guy, a great leader, vocal, positive throughout the game. He's one of those players that you need around because he keeps the team moving forward. Months later, when Clark opened the season against Benedictine, Mueller's and Thompson's connection was apparent. They hooked up 6 times for 43 yards. The Pride lost 38-0, but in the big picture, Coach Miguel Regalado sees big things from this combo this season. Mueller is a talented guy, said Regalado, who's leading Clark on his second ever football season. His final year at Baker, he called me up and said, Coach, they're moving in a different direction. I'd love to come over and have an opportunity with you. I welcomed him because he's a fantastic kid, extremely talented, and he's going to be a great quarterback for us. As far as transfer students go, Mueller's connection to his new university is as intriguing as it gets. 2 seasons ago, as a then sophomore in 2018, Mueller started 7 games at Baker, helping lead the Wildcats to a 9-3 record in the quarterfinals of the NAIA FCS playoffs. He posted 1,251 yards and 11 touchdowns throwing, along with another 160 yards rushing with a score. He made another 4 appearances as a freshman, and as a first-year redshirt, he was part of Baker when the Wildcats advanced all the way to the 2016 national title game. It turns out there's 2 members from that Baker team now at Clark, Mueller and the guy that recruited him to Baker to begin with, Coach Regalado. In 2016, Regalado was the Wildcats' offensive coordinator. Months later, in April 2017, Clark introduced him as the first head coach in program history. I would say Regalado is the reason I was drawn to Clark, said Mueller, a junior and El Paso, Texas native. We went to the national championship and I had that whole experience. We found out that next spring that he was going to Clark. That was great for him, super happy for him. He was a big part of our offense that was leaving. After everything went down at Baker, I asked him if my transfer could go through. It did, thankfully, and I'm glad it got done. Even with his Baker resume, Mueller wasn't necessarily the presumptive starter when the Pride opened camp. Tim Evett, himself a transfer student who'd won Clark's starting job last season before an injury shut him down, was back in the mix as well as Kenyon Williams, who'd replaced Evett for the remainder of the season. Mueller won the job anyway. Regalado said the competition for the starting spot brought the best out of the position group. He flat out won the job in the summer, Regalado said. I'll tell you that Tim Evett played as good a football this summer as he's played since he's been here. There was a fantastic competition all summer long. Evett led Clark on a touchdown in the program's very first opening drive. Mueller's Pride career didn't get off to such a hot start. His very first throw in a Clark uniform was an interception that Benedictine wound up turning into the game's first touchdown. The Pride then stalled on a 3-and-out on the following drive. But in the next series, Mueller flashed why he could be the guy for the Pride this season. With a penalty pushing Clark back to 3rd-and-17 on its own 22, Mueller wiggled out of the Ravens' pressure and burst down the left sideline for a 44-yard run. He then connected with Thompson, Brandon Fisher, and Darius Hernandez to set the Pride up at Benedictine's 18. Of course, given the shutout loss, that was one of many drives Clark couldn't cap off with a score. The Pride were also missing their starting kicker in isolation from a coronavirus exposure. Evett replaced Mueller late in the third quarter after a 22-of-40 night for 170 yards and 3 interceptions. Mueller also led the team with 49 yards on the ground. It's also worth noting that Benedictine, ranked 18th in the NAIA polls, is coming off its own stint in the NAIA division playoffs. But in Mueller, Thompson, Evett, and other transfers on the Clark squad, Regalado sees pieces falling into place for the Pride. They bring the experience and leadership to a still young team that's looking to take a step forward. It's not quite a playoff-caliber team, Mueller said, which will make his 2020 experience a little different than his previous college playing days. But being part of Clark's growth is also something that excites the Pride's new gunslinger. It's a big difference, Mueller said, but in a way, I like the difference. I like being able to grow with the offense, the defense, the special teams. The young players, inexperience is a good thing for us because they get that experience and understand what they've got to do. I think it's a one game at a time kind of thing. Next, this week's finalist for Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Haley Heyer of East Dubuque. Heyer ran a 19:52 on a tough and hilly course at East Dubuque High School on Thursday. She won the race by over 2.5 minutes to get her second win of the year. Ellie O'Brien, Bellevue Marquette. O'Brien shattered the school record for kills in a match with 28 in a 3-2 victory at Cedar Valley Christian on Thursday. The Mohawks won 25-16, 25-20, 23-25, 20-25, 15-10. O'Brien's big night raised her kill total to 70 through the first 8 matches of the season. Jax Stelzer, Western Dubuque. Stelzer, a senior at Western Dubuque, ranks number 7 among all Iowa Class 4A golfers with a 72.75 stroke average through 4 18-hole rounds this season. Stelzer fired a 3-over par 75 to finish 4th overall, leading the Bobcats to a 319 and 4th place in the standings out of 6 teams at the Mississippi Valley Conference Mississippi Divisional meet last week. Visit telegraphherald.com/athlete to cast your vote. The polls close at 5 p.m. each Tuesday. In the local and area roundup, Stangs debut at number 9 in 4A. A big road win was enough to get Dubuque Hempstead into the Class 4A top 10. The Mustangs, 3-1, garnered 28 votes and were 9th in this week's Associated Press football rankings. Hempstead has won 2 straight games, including a 20-13 victory over previously ranked Cedar Falls, 2-2. Dubuque Senior, 2-2, received 3 votes after a 31-0 dismantling of previously ranked Cedar Rapids, Washington. West Delaware, 4-1, remained at number 10 in the Class 3A rankings. Western Dubuque, 3-1, received 6 votes. Maquoketa, 2-1, received 5 votes in Class 2A, and Edgewood Colesburg, 4-0, dropped 1 spot to number 5 in Class A. Prep Volleyball. Belmont 3, Cassville 2, at Belmont, Wisconsin. Chloe Crapp had 4 aces and 14 kills as the Braves outlasted the Comets 25-21, 25-21, 24-26, 18-25, and 15-5. Riley Rogers and Rylan Moots added 8 kills apiece for Belmont, 1-1. Anna Cartman led Cassville with 15 kills, 21 digs, and 5 blocks. Prep Cross Country. Comets take first at Bellevue. Brady Grebel won in 16:02, and Peyton Grebel was 5th in 17:21, leading Bellevue 30 points over Northeast Goose Lake, 49 points for the Bellevue Invitational title. Harden was 22nd for Maquoketa with 120 points, which placed 6th. Tracy Nolan was 38th, pacing Marquette 172 points to a 10th place finish. Boys Prep Golf. Eagles take 3rd at Cedar Falls, Iowa. Alex Link shot 41 to lead Wallert 166, which finished 3rd behind Cedar Falls 143 and Lindmar 159 at Pheasant Ridge Golf Course. Mustangs 4th at Waterloo, Iowa. Will Sigworth shot 39 as the Mustangs placed fourth at the Irving Warren Invitational behind Cedar Rapids Prairie 150, Cedar Rapids Washington 153, and Waterloo West 157. Galena 165, East Dubuque 173 at East Dubuque, Illinois. Ryan Stoffregan shot 37 to lead Galena over the Warriors at Lacoma's Red Course. Sam Stewart's 43 led East Dubuque. Blackhawks win at Stockton, Illinois. Austin Chumbler earned medalist honors with a 45, and Stockton shot 189 as a team to beat Forreston 227 and Warren 235 at Woodbine Bend Golf Course. Girls Prep Golf. Galena 209, West Carroll 236 at Thompson, Illinois. Aiden Wells shot 51 to lead the Pirates to a victory over the Thunder at Sandbur Run Golf Course. Darlington 227, Southwestern 228 at Cuba City, Wisconsin. Darlington's Brianna Gavinsky shot 54 to tie for medalist honors with Southwestern Cuba City's Shelby Soha, but the Redbirds beat the co-op by the narrowest margin at Coal Acres Golf Course. In college athletics, American Rivers Conference, the ARC suspends all winter sports. The American Rivers Conference announced Monday that it was suspending all winter sports until at least January 1, following a unanimous vote by the conference's President's Council. The announcement comes less than a week after the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Conference voted to postpone its winter sports season until at least 2021. The ARC, which includes Loras College and the University of Dubuque, sponsors five winter sports: men's and women's basketball, wrestling, and men's and women's indoor track and field. The conference's decision is for all competition, including games, scrimmages, and joint practices. However, it does not prohibit those programs from practicing. Indoor track and field programs can begin practice immediately. Basketball and wrestling teams must wait until October 1st to begin practice. The league expects to release schedules for previously postponed fall seasons for football, volleyball, and men's and women's soccer no later than September 30th. From Sports in Brief, under NFL football, Giants Barkley out for year with torn ACL. New York Giants running back Saquon Barkley likely will miss the rest of the season with a major injury to his right knee. The Giants, 0-2, said an MRI on Monday confirmed Barkley tore the anterior cruciate ligament in the knee on Sunday in a loss to the Chicago Bears. The 2018 NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year will undergo surgery in the near future, the team said. Panthers McCaffrey out multiple weeks. Christian McCaffrey said he plans to attack his rehabilitation from a high ankle sprain the same way he does everything else, with a full head of steam. The All-Pro running back is expected to miss multiple weeks with a high right ankle sprain he sustained in Carolina's 31-17 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. Broncos Locke to miss time, Sutton Dunn. Quarterback Drew Locke could be out until mid-season with a severely bruised throwing shoulder, and whenever he does return, he'll be without his top target for the rest of the season. Coach Vic Fangio confirmed Monday that Pro Bowl wide receiver Cortland Sutton tore his left ACL in his season debut Sunday and is done for the season. Colts lose second starter to Achilles tear. The Indianapolis Colts have played two games and lost two starters with torn Achilles tendons. Coach Frank Reich announced Monday that safety Malik Hooker would miss the rest of the season after tearing his Achilles in Sunday's 28-11 victory, the same injury running back Marlon Mack suffered on opening day. Jets wide receiver Perryman could miss time. New York Jets wide receiver Breshad Perryman could be sidelined for some games after spraining his left ankle against San Francisco on Sunday. Perryman left the 31-13 loss midway through the second quarter. Seahawks deny Pats Newton at the 1 to seal win. Cam Newton was stopped at the 1-yard line on the final play, and the Seattle Seahawks held off the New England Patriots 35-30 on Sunday night. Newton led New England 80 yards in the closing moments trying to spoil the performance of Seattle quarterback Russell Wilson, who matched his career high with 5 touchdown passes. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be safe.